Now then, good morning to you. It is March 29th, 2024. That means it's Good Friday. It is Good Friday, the Easter bank holiday weekend is upon us, and I, for one, am delighted about that. It's lovely. It's a glorious morning, a very bright morning here in Salford. I'm about 20 minutes late. Not late. I don't put a timing on it, but it's 6:27 as I turn on the old Tascam quarter-inch tape machine. Of course, I don't have a Tascam quarter-inch tape machine, but God be with the days. I was trained on one of those machines many, many eons ago. Older listeners will remember those machines, those wonderful machines, beautiful sound out of them, where you would take a big old Tascam machine to interview somebody in the field, as it was referred to, and then you would come back and you would begin to cut and splice, which is a great skill. And I'm going to say, and I'm not being modest, I was fair to middling at the cutting and the splicing. I wasn't too shabby, but there were blokes I worked with that were outstanding at doing that. You couldn't hear nothing. You could never hear the cut or the edit. Those were the days. And I remember asking my bosses back in the day, sure, mini disc players have just been released by Sony. What do I have to learn this old shite for when I'll hardly ever need to use it? In fact, I think I took a Tascam tape machine to an interview situation only twice. There you are. Little bit of broadcasting history from the Baldy Gammon this Friday morning. Happy Easter, by the way. It's a very important time of year for Christians, and most of us, most of our friends and neighbours are Christians. We ought to mark it, to note it, and we ought to celebrate it. So there you are. That's from an agnostic. Straight to the front pages. The Oi paper. Sure, I only got into this in great detail in yesterday's Richie Allen show. Taxpayers may be forced to bail out Thames Water as customers face 40% hike in bills. I am not going to go into a rant about it. I did it yesterday. This is a scandal beyond scandals, above all scandals, lately anyway. In domestic politics, I mean, there are things going on geopolitically which are horrendous, of course, Sudan, Gaza. But this is disgusting. Thames Water customers might see their bills hiked up by 40% by 2030, according to Chris Weston, the CEO, because of the company's high levels of debt. If you want to know what I feel about privatisation, listen to the monologue, yesterday's Richie Allen show. I won't get into it now because, as I said, I'd only be repeating myself. The Times headline, clean your own mess, Thames Water told. Yeah. Nationalise it. Kick them all out, I say. Okay. That's the... There's also a photograph on the front page of The Times of Labour's leader and deputy leader embracing. They were speaking in Birmingham, I think, yesterday. They were launching the Labour Party's local election campaign, I suppose. And many of the papers are carrying stories today about the deputy leader, Angela Rayner, who has questions to ask. To answer, even. I'm sure she has plenty of questions to ask about her tax affairs and a home that she bought in the Right to Buy scheme, and a home she was living in with her husband, and are her tax affairs in proper order? We might come back to it, right? It's been an ongoing story, that, for a couple of weeks or more. More, in fact. The Daily Express, disgrace. Fat cat water bosses under fire. It's, of course, about the Thames story. Michael Gove, the levelling up secretary, said the company's leaders must carry the can. Okay. The Daily Telegraph, PM under fire after honour for top donor, is the headline. So Rishi Sunak has requested that major Conservative Party donor Mohamed Mansour should be given a knighthood, basically. And Sunak is being criticised in the press today for this. Honours for cash, basically. He's nominated his Easter honours list. Sunak has also nominated the film director Christopher Nolan, who I believe his film Oppenheimer, which I haven't seen. Well, I know it swept the board at the Oscars recently. Isn't that right? Okay. The Telegraph is speculating also today that Sunak might be considering a summer general election, that we might be going to the polls in June. The Daily Mail, Rayner on the ropes. Angela Rayner is on the ropes, according to the Daily Mail. Its front page dedicated to questions around the deputy leader of the Labour Party and her tax affairs. According to the Mail, police are set to reassess claims made about her previously, despite police at the time saying that there was no need to investigate her. Rayner effectively denies underpaying tax on a property she sold before becoming an MP. Capital gains tax. If you own a property and then you sell it for a profit, it must be taxed according to tax laws in the UK. And it is being claimed that she didn't pay capital gains tax. She says she acted according to the advice she was given by tax experts at the time. She's also coming out and saying, I'll publish mine if you publish yours. She's saying to Tories, particularly the Tories who want to see her investigated, why don't you publish your tax accounts, your tax details over the last decade, and we'll see what's what. The Daily Mirror, Save Lives for Martin, is the headline on the front page of the Mirror, and this is about the Manchester Arena bombing. I'll say no more right now because I'm coming back to it in about 10 minutes' time. Beyonce has a new album out, by the way, and a number of newspapers are featuring it today. It has been reviewed by most of the papers, culture editors, and, you know, their usual reviewers, their music critics. And apparently it's half decent. I might invest in it. I might have a go at it myself. Beyonce, yes. I remember years ago, Beyonce, I was very impressed with Beyonce. She headlined Glastonbury. If memory serves, she headlined it on the same weekend it was headlined by U2. U2. I can't remember if U2 played the Friday or the Saturday. I think the Friday. The weather was horrendous, and it was basically washed out, although, to be fair, the majority of the crowd stayed to watch Bonio, who looked very uncomfortable at the time because he'd only recovered from a terrible accident on a push bike. I'm not joking, he fell off a bike in New York. Knowing Bono, he was probably pissed, and he had to have major surgery on his back, and he was wearing a brace. So he looked very uncomfortable on a very slippery stage. Not the triumphant debut on the Glastonbury Pyramid stage that Bono had imagined. But they did okay, U2, but the weather was horrendous. But the following night, Beyonce took to the stage. The skies were clear, and there was no water. And she wasn't wearing a brace because she didn't fall off a bike because she was pissed out of her brains. And I had never really paid much attention to Beyonce until I watched her that night at Glastonbury, and I thought she was absolutely magnetic. Magnetic. She was brilliant on the night, in my opinion. The Sun, Gogglebox George death arrest. So this is about a man who was on Celebrity Big Brother, and he was also well known for Gogglebox, the stupid television show where you sit down and you watch people watching telly, which I talked about yesterday. Ridiculous. This poor chap was working in a warehouse and he has had an accident and he's died. And a man has been arrested on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter. So maybe health and safety wasn't as it should have been in this particular place of work. The guy was an electrician and he was 40. The Guardian, famine is setting in. UN court orders Israel to unblock Gaza aid, is The Guardian. We'll come back to that in a moment. The Daily Star headline is The Full Nelson. Storm brings snow, sleet, rain, 70 mile per hour winds and a pollen bomb. Happy Easter, The Full Nelson, says The Sun. If you're holding out for some good weather this weekend, The Sun claims you won't have it because Storm Nelson is on the way. Right. Between the Sun and the Telegraph and their obsession with the weather, eh? Eh? Let's go inside. You're listening to The Papers with me, Richie Allen. Thank you for downloading the podcast. So we'll start with that Guardian front page then. Famine is setting in. UN court orders Israel to unblock Gaza food aid. A panel of judges at the UN, at the UN's top court, which is already considering a complaint from South Africa that Israel is committing genocide in the Palestinian territory, issued the ruling that Israel must unblock Gaza, get out of the way and let aid in. They issued the ruling yesterday after an emergency measure in January obliging Israel to admit emergency aid. The judges are and were unanimous in this decision. They said Palestinians in Gaza are facing worsening conditions of life and famine and starvation is spreading. They said in the judgment the court observed that Palestinians in Gaza are no longer facing only a risk of famine, but that famine is now setting in. The International Court of Justice said Israel must allow the aid in. It's a legally binding order, this. Israel should take all necessary and effective measures to ensure without delay, in full cooperation with the UN, the unhindered provision at scale by all concerned of urgently needed basic services and humanitarian assistance, including food, water, fuel and medical supplies. And please stop bombing hospitals and telling lies about Hamas militants operating from within the hospitals. This is me now, this isn't the judges. Stop bombing the hospitals. According to The Guardian, the ICJ also ordered Israel to immediately ensure that its military doesn't commit acts which constitute a violation of any of the rights of the Palestinians in Gaza as a protected group under the convention. Yeah, Israel says we're not committing genocide and we're acting in self-defence. And that's a quote from The Guardian article. Fuck off, you're not acting in self-defence. You're committing genocide. You are attempting to completely eradicate the people of Palestine and make it impossible to ever return to their land, to their homes. And what you really want is for them to flee into Egypt and beyond. And that's the opinion of this broadcaster. God love them. And God love the people of Sudan. Yes, I acknowledge there has been scant mention, of course, on the Richie Allen Show of the situation in Sudan. But it's not that I'm not interested in it or that the independent media is not interested in it. It's just that there's not much that I can say about it, really, you know, other than it is absolutely horrendous. Again, you know, people fleeing death and destruction and having to flee that and then face up to famine and starvation and disease. It is horrendous. The news, Channel 4 News had, Andrew Mitchell is out there, isn't he? And he was on Channel 4 News last night crying in the face of what he has witnessed out there. It is terrible. It really is. And I don't know what to say about it. Sky News covering it this morning. More than 100 settlements set on fire with over a quarter targeted more than once. It's a horrible situation. I'll say no more about that because I can't find the words. So we'll go to the Telegraph. Army allows beards as it ends 100-year ban. If you've got a son or a daughter in the army. I have a neighbour in the army and a friend, fantastic kid, Matty Calderwood, recently became the UK Armed Forces boxing champion. 65 kg, I think. I hope it's 65 kg. Lovely, lovely kid from a fantastic family. But he's clean shaven, is Matty. I'm not sure he's going to be jumping up and down with joy. Maybe he will be, but soldiers will be allowed to grow beards. The army overturns a 100-year ban on facial hair. The King, who is Commander-in-Chief of the Army, signed off on the decision yesterday for officers and soldiers to grow and to cultivate beards. But they have to be neat and tidy, apparently. Following a review of the Army's policy on appearances and beards, General Sir Patrick Saunders, the head of the Army, took the decision that the appearance policy will change after a survey of both serving and reservist troops. The findings showed an overwhelming majority felt the army needed to change policy and allow soldiers to wear beards. Grant Shapps, the defence secretary, said the beard ban was ludicrous when discussing the army's recruitment crisis. Yes. Okay. I wonder, I won't. There's a very bad joke there, but I'm not going to go into it. The Times. Church tribunal clears clergyman who called trans archdeacon a bloke. Brett Murphy was an Anglican priest when he posted comments to his 14,000 YouTube subscribers. He commented on the appointment of Rachel Mann as the Archdeacon of Bolton and Salford last year. Rachel Mann is aptly surnamed because Rachel is a man. Rachel is a tranny, a man who claims to be a woman. So in comments to his 14,000 YouTube subscribers, Brett Murphy said that Mann was in fact biologically a bloke who identifies and lives as a woman, and he referred to Mann as a fella. But then he went on to speculate, did Murphy, whether or not the appointment of Mann indicated that the Anglican hierarchy was positioning the trans person to become the Church of England's first transsexual bishop, you see. So Murphy was a bit of a conspiracy theorist. And he says, I wonder, the promotion of this Rachel Mann, who is a man, is the Anglican Church, is the Church of England basically trying to, in a very woke way, appoint the first transsexual bishop? Murphy said, what you are seeing here is someone who is a radical rainbow activist being put in a position of a high authority in a diocese. So obviously he was censured and he was complained about, but the complaints have not been upheld. David Turner, KC, Deputy President of the Church's Disciplinary Tribunal, ruled Murphy has no case to answer, but he has left the church, has the guy Murphy, because he objects to its plans to introduce same-sex blessings in places of worship. A lot of priests in the Church of England, a lot of deans, a lot of reverends have left because they don't want to be put in a position where they have to turn down same-sex couples. Because the Church of England says it's up to churches, it's up to priests, it's up to individual priests whether or not they give a blessing to a same-sex couple in a church. We leave it up to the priests themselves, which is a cop-out. A lot of priests don't want to do it. I totally understand why they wouldn't want to do it. If their faith is sincere, homosexuality is a sin, isn't it? Anyway, Express, more than 10,000 sex offence trials yet to go to trial in court backlog. This is amazing, really. The Express says, more than 10,000 sex offences and rapes are yet to go to trial in huge Crown Court backlogs, according to new figures. According to the Ministry of Justice, there are now more than 67,500 crimes across England and Wales that are waiting to go to trial, something lawyers claim is a 23-year high. The lawyers also say rape victims are being given false hope that their cases will come to trial. These figures were released yesterday, and they show the overall backlog for court cases has risen 8% in the last 12 months. That was despite the government hoping to reduce it to 53,000 by this time next year. It comes as a senior presiding judge, Lord Justice Edis, unveiled plans this month that would see all rape cases waiting more than 2 years heard within 5 months. Now, the chair of the Criminal Bar Association, a woman called Tana Adkin, she's calling on the government to invest in legal professionals to help reduce the backlog. She told the Law Gazette that doing nothing to increase rape and serious sexual offence fees is not an option unless we want to accept that rape and serious sexual offence trials will continue to be delayed for years, repeatedly postponed on the day because there is no barrister to prosecute or to offend. Can you imagine being the victim of rape or serious sexual assault and you turn up on the day, and this doesn't happen once but many times, and you are told it is being postponed because there is no barrister, there is nobody there to prosecute, there is nobody there to defend. 10,000 sex offence trials yet to go to trial in backlog. What happened to your right to speedy justice? Okay. Let's now turn to the front page story on today's Mirror. You'll be interested in this. The Mirror claims an exclusive. Exclusive. Manchester Arena bombing victim inspires proposed law to protect venues from terrorists. Manchester Arena bombing victim Martin Hett has inspired a proposed law to protect entertainment venues from terrorists. The tough new rules are set to be recommended in a government report after a campaign by his mother, Fegan Murray. She said it would be a victory for his legacy and that action is needed now before it is too late. The news comes days after the concert massacre in Moscow, which left 137 dead. The Home Office document is expected to lay out measures such as venue staff needing counter-terror training, bosses carrying out stringent risk analysis inside and outside premises, and, in some cases, beefing up electronic security such as metal detectors. The proposals are set to form the basis of Martin's Law, named after Fegan's son, one of the 22 people killed in the arena bombing in Manchester in 2017. Fegan, 62, is backing the expected measures in the report. She said, "ISIS has shown in Moscow they're still a huge threat. We have to move quickly to shore up our defences against terror. We are living in one of the most dangerous times for terror," she said. "It has not been this bad since 27 and the wave of awful attacks we saw that year. Any day now we will get a response from the long consultation on Martin's Law, which needs to be implemented immediately to safeguard this country against the wave of terror which I fear is sweeping Europe." What a detailed statement on terrorism by the mother of one of the victims of the arena bombing. It's very detailed, that statement. She goes on, "The attack in Moscow knocked me sideways. It devastated me, brought everything back. There were so many similarities to the one that killed Martin." Well, there wasn't really, was there? It's completely different. If you believe the Manchester Arena bombing report, Salman Abedi, acting alone, strapped on a rucksack full of explosives, entered the foyer of the Manchester Arena, which is over the Victoria train station, and detonated. What we had in Moscow was a number of attackers carrying machine guns and petrol bombs. Very different. But anyway, she said, "We need this law now to know that other people's children are safer because of what we have done would bring me great solace. We have fought so hard and so long." It's very early in the morning. It's still 6:50 a.m. It's 6:50 as I record this. I'm just about to finish. You have to ask about the payoff. What's the payoff? I suppose the payoff for those who commit false flag offences against people. And I believe that the Manchester Arena bombing was a false flag terror event. That's what I believe. I don't believe this story that Salman Abedi, this guy, the son of Ramadan Abedi, who worked for MI6 in Libya. I don't believe that, you know, this guy acting on behalf of, you know, an Islamist, or acting through an Islamist ideology, decided to go into the arena and kill people at the Ariana Grande concert. I don't believe this. I believe this was deep state stuff. I really do believe that, right? Like the 7th of July, 2005. I differ from a lot of truthers. I believe that something did happen at the arena and that more than likely people did in fact die. But I admit that the images we've seen and the video we've seen, there's a lot of problems with it. But anyway, I won't get into any of that. What's the payoff then? Why would they do stuff like this? I suppose one of the payoffs, you might argue, is that It's the problem reaction solution playbook, isn't it? It then paves the way for people to accept more and more surveillance and more restriction on freedom, freedom to move around easily and not be encumbered by, you know, guards or the police or security. I suppose it makes the things we loved, like going out to a concert, it all of a sudden makes those things a bit cumbersome or problematic or less enjoyable. Look, I went to the very first concert after the arena reopened in 2017, after the incident. The very first concert to take place there was Neil Diamond. It was supposed to be the Kings of Leon, but the Kings of Leon cancelled. And I went to see Neil Diamond, and I was horrified by what I encountered. Airport-style scanners and security staff screaming at people to get into lines and cameras everywhere. So maybe that's the payoff, maybe. You know, to make such events, such outdoor gatherings, which were beautiful things to witness and to participate in, maybe to make them very unpalatable for people, unenjoyable. I don't know. Keep people indoors. I don't know. You know, persuade people to accept far more surveillance, possibly. But what happened in 2017 is very problematic. I believe the official story is nonsense, but I'm not sure, really, as to how many people died. I think something happened there, and I've outlined my reasons for this previously. So that's in the Mirror. It's their big story today. The Sun's big exclusive is an interview with Dickie Arbiter. What a fucking stupid name. Dickie Arbiter. He's a very famous royal correspondent and royal family reporter, is Dickie Arbiter. And he's an insider. And he's told The Sun today that cruel trolls have upset Kate and William. And this is all about the speculation about the whereabouts of this woman, the Princess of Wales, who hadn't been seen from Christmas until Mother's Day. She put out a Mother's Day picture. It was shown to be digitally altered. That fueled more speculation online about what was going on with her. And then on the day of the Moscow terror attack, she put out a video of herself saying, "Look, I've been having treatment for cancer, just like my father-in-law, Dickie Arbiter." Ridiculous name, Dickie. He's been saying, "Look, they're very upset about these conspiracy theories. God love them. Listen, don't believe it. I'll tell you what they fear more than anything, these bastards." And by bastards, I don't mean the individuals. I mean the whole institution. The thing they fear more than anything is apathy. That's what they really fear. You know, or they fear people saying, "Why the fuck are we keeping these people living in the lap of luxury? Just because they were born, you know, because they were born to a woman who herself was born to a king and was born. Why do we put up with this lineage, this nonsense?" That's what they probably really fear. Listen, it's Easter. So let me tell you the way it's going to be. The papers now will return next Tuesday at the usual time. The podcast will be live at the usual time. This is because Monday is Easter Monday bank holiday. I will not be working. So the papers comes back next Tuesday, as does the Richie Allen Show. I'm on air on Sunday morning. That is 2 days from now, Easter Sunday, of course, with Sunday Morning Melodies, the Easter Sunday edition. I'm looking forward to that. That programme will then go on hiatus for a month and will return on May 5th. I'm giving the Melodies a break. It's been on now for over 2.5 years. It's never had a break, and I need a little bit of a break, right? But throughout April, the Richie Allen Show and the Papers podcast will continue to broadcast as normal. All that remains, my dear listener, is to say to you, Happy Easter. I hope you have a lovely bank holiday weekend, whatever you're doing. If you're driving somewhere and it's long distance, take your time. I do mean this. I'm not patronising you. Take your time and relax. My holidays these days are usually long distance driving holidays in the UK because we have two young dogs, and I love taking my time. Put some nice music on the stereo. Strap in. Don't do anything without checking your mirrors. Right. Stay in the left lane on the motorway. Don't hog the middle lane. chill out. You'll get there in the end and you'll be all the happier because you've relaxed on your drive. Relax. Something I learned to do. I love driving now. 55 miles an hour in the left lane. Just chill. And you'll really enjoy it. Happy Easter, my friend. I hope you can join me on Easter Sunday morning for The Melodies, which is the programme I love more than anything. I'll see you there, and the shows then return on Tuesday. See you soon. Bye.